dress from my hat down to oh, my boots. I still act and look the same. What you see ain't nothing new. I think I lost y'all there for a minute. And we are back. You are listening to The Jeff Poor Show with April Marie. We started out the first half an hour talking about what was going on at Space Camp. And now we are welcoming our guest. As I mentioned before we went to break, there are two things. I used to be a single issue voter. One issue could make or break candidates for me. I'd seen some conservatives who were not great on the Second Amendment and found some independents or some, even Democrats when I lived in Florida who were, and I was a single issue voter. I've now gained to where I am a two issue voter, one being the Second Amendment and then the other being protecting our children. And so we now have a smaller batch of candidates to choose from. But gun owners and gun companies, their options are growing as a new, and it's not even terribly new, a newer voice is gaining strength in the Second Amendment space. I welcome Larry Keene on the show. Hi, Larry.
Hey, April. Thanks for having us.
It's great to talk to you. Now, you are with NSSF, which is the Firearm Industries Trade Association. Tell us a little bit about your group.
So the National Shooting Sports Foundation, or NSSF, is, as you mentioned, the trade association for America's firearms, ammunition, hunting, and shooting sports industry. So we have about 10,500 members. They're all the major firearms and ammunition brands, you know, wholesale distributors and firearms retailers all across the country, from large, big box stores like Bass Pro Shops, Cabela's, Academy, et cetera, down to individual mom and pop stores on the backcountry roads of Alabama are our members. So, we focus on the industry and bring to the Second Amendment debate the industry's perspective. And when you think about it, April, purchasing a firearm is the quintessential exercise of the Second Amendment rights. So, we've been around since the early 60s, but have grown tremendously over the last 20 plus years in response to the threats to our industry and to the Second Amendment by anti-gun politicians and, gun control groups like Everytown and Giffords and the Brady Bunch. So we've got a lot of challenges, but we're up to the fight.
Well, I appreciate everything you're doing. There was a recent story that highlighted the amount of money. And it's not the amount of money so much as, big money changing and influencing politics, but just the force that you guys have put forth in filling the gap. There's been some, for lack of a better way to explain it, some complications and some distractions over in other parts of the Second Amendment lobby, Second Amendment world. But you guys spent over $5 million on lobbying just to make sure that and it's not just the gun industry, but gun owners, by virtue of the same priorities, are being covered in the federal atmosphere, right?
Oh, yeah. So, over the last 25 years or so, NSSF has continued to grow and expand its government relations capability to protect our industry and to protect the Second Amendment so your listeners can exercise their constitutional rights. So now, we don't really look at the numbers or compare ourselves to others, but people tell us that we now exceed, at least in lobbying expenditures, what other groups do. And as you mentioned, the largest of those groups has been struggling with some self-inflicted wounds, but hopefully that they will right that ship in the near future. But we've continued to grow our capability, both at the federal level and at the state level. So we have state lobbyists and consultants all across the country working issues, you know, in Birmingham, among others. So, and certainly we've got a presence in Washington, D.C., where, you know, some people claim we're the most powerful lobbying voice in Washington, D.C. on the pro-gun side of things. But we're very proud of that. And we're going to, as you mentioned, there was an NBC News story recently that, and it's not the first time, but that's the most recent, where we've seen stories, you know, saying, well, who is this group? The NSSF and the gun control groups are certainly trying to make us their new boogeyman so they can raise money off of us. So they attack us and mischaracterize what we stand for, what our positions are on issues, which is not surprising. You know, that's what they have to do to raise money to keep themselves in business, so to speak.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the priorities and things you guys are working for, because the Democrats have gone away from necessarily what would be considered direct attacks on Second Amendment rights. And they've started these kind of behind the scenes efforts that to curtail things. They're increasing the price of ammo, trying to ban specific gun parts, trying to deplatform, make it so gun shops and gun industries can't have bank accounts. What are some of those biggest threats as you perceive them today that are these kind of work around going after Second Amendment rights?
That are being employed by the gun control community and their allies in elected offices. So one of them, as you mentioned, is trying to make it more difficult for people to purchase products that are protected by the Second Amendment. So we see in California, for example, an 11% excise tax on all firearms and ammunition sales, which you know, it is intended to suppress the right. We see that now in other states, Maryland, Massachusetts. We saw efforts in New Mexico. They're always trying to ban, you know, firearms and ammunition products. You know, we're facing, you know, assault weapons ban in Rhode Island, for example. They are also a direct attack on the industry is trying to come up with clever ways to circumvent and avoid the will of Congress in passing the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which is intended to stop any lawsuit that seeks to blame a law-abiding manufacturer or retailer who legally sells a product that is then later misused by some third party to cause harm. I mean, that was what the city lawsuits back in the late 90s, early 2000s was all about. And we beat those back with the state laws that were passed, including in Alabama, and then the federal bill signed by President Bush in 2005. And I'm very proud, the highlight of my career was helping to draft and get that legislation passed. But these gun control groups and politicians with these, you know, New York white shoe law firms are trying to come up with these clever and creative ways to sidestep it and essentially codify negligence claims that are, you know, just the same thing that the city lawsuits were about, is blaming the industry for the misuse of lawfully sold products. It's like blaming Ford for drunk driving or, you know, Budweiser for drunk driving accidents, or knife manufacturers when somebody uses a knife to stab somebody. So obviously common sense tells you that's ridiculous. That's not what the law is, and certainly not what the law should be. But, you know, they want to try to drive us, bankrupt us, drive us out of business, sue us to the point where you can't afford to fight anymore and you just knuckle under and agree to a settlement, a court-ordered settlement that imposes gun control measures that the legislature would never pass. So yeah, it's a way to what they call regulation through litigation, or some people refer to it now as lawfare. So that's a big deal. And you mentioned the discrimination we see, banking, you know, social media platforms, insurance companies. So we're working a number of bills, both at the state level and in Congress, what we call the FIND Act, the Firearms Industry Non-Discrimination Act. Now, the latest wrinkle we see is attempts to use these merchant category codes to try to see what people are buying, to try to shut down and stop credit card transactions to buy firearms or ammunition from a gun dealer. So, you know, you used to have to, you know, the old saying, you know, what's in your wallet? Now you have to worry about who's in your wallet. We see this going on. Just the other day, there was a hearing in Congress about the weaponization by the Treasury Department, asking banks and stores to tell the federal government who used the credit card to purchase guns, who used the credit card to purchase ammunition. And actually, they don't even know if they purchased it. They just know, well, tell us if anybody used their credit card to buy something at Cabela's in this time frame. And then they're using that information and do searches, you know, to see if they, on their social media, did they say anything about January 6th, Trump? Did they say anything about Bibles? I mean, it's just really chilling what the federal government is doing to spy, frankly, on American citizens exercising constitutional rights.
It's invasive and it's wrong. It is a workaround, as you said, or an attempt at a workaround for to combat the fact that over and over again, courts and legislatures around the nation have said, the Supreme Court has said that the Second Amendment is an individual right, and that we have this right to buy firearms to protect ourselves, to hunt for any reason. One of my biggest pet peeves is people saying, "Oh, well, why do you need that to hunt?" Well, why does anybody, you know, need their particular preference for First Amendment things they can say or sing or do or art they can make? We don't have to justify our rights and our choice to use them. We're going to hit go ahead.
I was going to say that's exactly right. I mean, you know, you don't need to justify the why. You have the right, and it's the government's burden to justify taking that right away from you. That's what the Supreme Court made very clear in the Bruin decision. And we see the appellate courts now, you know, coming up with these creative decisions to, you know, switch the burden to the individual that's challenging a law to justify, you know, why they need a particular firearm. And it's not the burden of the citizen to justify the exercise of their right. It's the burden of the government, and a very heavy burden of the government, to take those rights away from you.
Absolutely. We're going to hit a break. When we come back, what we're going to do is I want to talk to you about there are some sneaky state things, as we mentioned, that they're trying to do. One of those has to do with gun locks and different storage, recommendations, but laws and procedures that essentially would undermine the ability of homeowners to defend themselves and their families. So I want to talk to you about that, and then talk to you about some of the different lawsuits pending where Second Amendment companies and individuals are standing up to the liberal left and their attempts to undermine this important right.
Great. Looking forward to it.
All right. Let's see if we can go to a break here.
It's where I drank my first beer. It's where I found Jesus.
Jeff Poor is celebrating the birth of his new son. Everybody, please keep them in your prayers. Mom and baby are doing well. You've got April Marie here today, and I am on the text line. So if you want to reach out to me there, that number, as always, 251-343-0106. It has been, man, this first hour has flown by. I have Larry on the line, Larry Keene from NSSF, that is the Firearm Industries Trade Association, and we are talking about the underhanded, sneaky, always devilish ways that the gun grabbers are going after your Second Amendment rights. Thanks for calling in today, Larry.
Oh, pleasure to be with you, April. Thanks for having us.
Well, one of the I have looked up, and I keep track of, even before session starts, I keep track of the bills that are filed related to the Second Amendment. in a pretty red state such as Alabama, you would think we would need to keep as close eye on these things, but you always do. There are always little things happening. This session, things don't seem to be moving in the wrong direction, but there's a couple bills that just keep popping up. One of those relates to the storage of firearms. Now, this is something that on a community service basis, your association works closely with, dedicated promoting the safe and responsible use of firearms. Tell us about your efforts to block the lawful storage of firearm and to help those in the community who need it.
So one of the things we see across the country in Washington and is efforts to mandate storage of firearms, and with criminal penalties. And we oppose those laws because the Supreme Court in Heller made very clear that mandatory locking laws are unconstitutional. Everyone talks about Heller as it did, saying it's an individual right. But Heller also involved a challenge to Washington, D.C.'s law of mandatory locking of firearms in the home, and the court said that's unconstitutional. So we oppose laws to do that both federally and at the state level because it's unconstitutional. But at the same time, as an industry, we think people need to be responsible gun owners and to secure their firearms appropriately based on their individual situation, so they're not accessible to young children, for example. And there are a wide variety of ways to do that. You could have a quick access lockbox. You can have a trigger lock, a cable lock, and things like that. There's no firearm made that can't be secured from an unauthorized use. But, that's an individual decision, and everyone, has to make that for themselves as to how to best accomplish that. One of the things the industry does, and we're very proud of, is we have a program called Project ChildSafe, where we have distributed over 41 million trigger locks or cable-style locks all across the United States, for free, distributed by local law enforcement in every state in the country to encourage people to be responsible gun owners. But again, every person's situation is different. If you have no children in the house, your situation is very different than if you're a single mom and you have a four-year-old toddler running around the house. Your needs and responsibilities change over time. But the important principle is that you're a responsible gun owner. And obviously, the vast overwhelming majority, of gun owners are responsible, law-abiding citizens and understand that with certain rights come responsibilities. You've got to be an adult. You've got to make sure you protect your kids from, you wouldn't let your kid run out into the street, right, with traffic going by. It's really no different. You have to be a responsible gun owner. But we do not support mandatory lock laws.
Well, and the overwhelming majority, as you said, of firearm owners take that responsibility, know that it is both a right and a responsibility, and take that very seriously. And most children who grow up in homes with strong Second Amendment supporters, though those children are taught the idea that just by virtue of there being a firearm in the house, that child's life is in danger is false. Children learn to learn gun safety. Well, tell our listeners where they can find you and your organization and learn more about you.
So you can go to nssf.org. That's our website. And I would also like just to make a quick plug, going back to the part of our beginning of our conversation about the politics. There's a big election coming up in November for president, who will control the Senate and the House of Representatives.